Welcome into the ESPN FC studios. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us for today's edition of the show. Plenty to get to. We're going to be joined in just a little bit by Craig Burley, continuing our build-up to the Champions League final on Sunday. But let's start this show actually handing out some hardware. The Europa League final played this afternoon. Final score, Sevilla 3, Inter Milan 2. What a game it was. Lukaku opening the scoring in the fifth minute. Sevilla clawing their way back in before Diego Carlos, of all people, with an overhead kick for the game winner in the second half. We're joined now by Frank Leboeuf, Ale Moreno, Julian Laurent for their reaction. Frank, what a game.
That was a fantastic game. Well, especially the first half. I mean that was a Absolutely fantastic in the way that you had counter-attack on counter-attack, you had actions and possibilities and opportunities to score every 3 minutes, and many comments to do. The way that Diego Carlos defended on two situations, or even three, when he gave a penalty away, a free kick away, and then hit the ball with a handball. He should have been red carded. And then and did that overhead kick fantastically, even if it's, for me, it's an on goal from Lukaku. So it was a great game. I mean, it could have gone either way, but it was entertaining, and I enjoyed the game, and I'm happy for the civilians and sad for Milan.
Ale, Inter Milan, big favorites heading into this match. They didn't really play their best. What did Sevilla do to neutralize them?
Well, we came into this match thinking that in order for Inter Milan somehow failing to win this final, they were going to have to help Sevilla. And I think Inter Milan did that. And the way that they helped Sevilla is, well, they defended poorly in set pieces and allowed Sevilla to get a couple of goals off of those set pieces. They also were so very poor in possession of the ball through the midfield. So many turnovers in basic passing, 5-yard passing, 10-yard passing, that all of a sudden allowed Sevilla to take a step forward and to think, you know what? We're good. We're solid. Yeah, maybe they're more talented. Maybe they have bigger names. Maybe they have a bigger roster sheet than we do in terms of the money and in terms of the talent and so on and so forth. But as a group, we're going to set our lines. We're going to force turnovers in bad areas, and then we're going to go on the attack from there. And Inter, I think, just got tight. And what I mean by that is that as the game wore on and they figure out that, you know what, they were in for a fight, that maybe we underestimated this team from Sevilla. Maybe it wasn't going to be nearly as easy as we thought it was going to be when Lukaku is taken down for the penalty and now it's 1-0 Inter. And you're thinking, all right, they're well on their way. Well, it wasn't the case. Sevilla had a reaction to everything that Inter did. And when it came down to it, Sevilla made enough plays to get past Inter. I also would have to say, we mentioned the name Diego Carlos. Truthfully and honestly, Diego Carlos should have been thrown out of the game in the initial play in which he takes Lukaku down. Mm. Now, people are going to get into the whole triple jeopardy discussion. I can tell you that it was the denial of a clear goal-scoring opportunity, and he makes no attempt whatsoever in playing the ball, and so therefore takes Lukaku down. For me, it should have been a red card. So Diego Carlos, who ended up being the main protagonist, the starring role in this whole picture, should not have been there to begin with.
Interesting point. Frank, do you agree? Should it have been a red? Just real quick, yes or no?
Yes, it should have been, even if it would have killed the game and the entertainment, but I agree with Ale. Yeah. Of course, nobody could have stopped Lukaku to face the goalkeeper, so it's a straight red card.
Jules, we know Antonio Conte is never happy. How upset will he be after this match? Not maybe just with the refereeing or the decisions that didn't go his way, but really with his team that at the end of the day, I think we can all agree, let themselves down today.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he would be cross with his players to start with. That's true. They didn't play at the level that they should have been playing, especially after that semi-final against Shakhtar, where they were really good collectively, very aggressive. They did the job that they had to do really well. But I think Conte has his part of responsibility as well. I mean, the young goal, the first goal, is the copy of the one that scored against Manchester United in the semi-final. If you knew that crosses would come from those two great fullbacks that they have in Reguilón and Jesús Navas, and you knew that there was one thing you had to do to stop De Jong and Sevilla scoring, really, was to stop those crosses or to defend on them better. And that first goal is an aberration to me. And I think Antonio Conte could be also upset with himself. I'm not sure he prepared that final in the best way he should have done. And I think he can also be upset with with Banega, because Eva Banega at some point reminded him that he had hair implants, and clearly seeing the reaction of Antonio Conte on the bench, who said to Eva Banega, "I'll wait for you outside after the game." He got a bit upset by Banega taking the mic out.
Guys, on this show, in the preview to this game, we were talking about the two teams. I think it's pretty unanimous that Inter Milan had the better squad. Ale, I'll start with you on this. What happened to their top two tonight? I know Lukaku gets the goal early on, but he was quiet, missed the one-on-one just before the game winner for Sevilla. Lautaro Martinez, we just didn't hear from him. What happened to them?
I'm going to leave Lautaro Martinez alone for a second, and I'm going to focus on Lukaku, because as I'm watching this game, the only thing that I could think of is that if our friend and colleague Steven Nichol is watching this game, he's yelling at the television, "Lukaku!" Because it is indeed the sort of game that gives you the perception of what Lukaku can be and what he isn't, what he could be, and what he ends up being. And the truth is, you see what Lukaku does to Diego Carlos in that first play. He turns and he uses his speed and the strength, and he gets away from him, and you're thinking, yeah, that's it. He's going to take over this match. And then when the game is on the balance, it's 2-2, he's getting away from the defender, 1v1 situation against the goalkeeper, he misses that chance. And so it's the two sides of Lukaku. And then to top it all off, the own goal, and which it's an unfortunate play, but it just so happens that it is Lukaku again. So I'm sure that Stevie was sitting at home just enjoying himself, because it is indeed a validation for what he's been saying all along about Lukaku, a guy that will score a bunch of goals, but in key moments, in key matches, seems to come up short. Maybe that may be unfair, but the truth is that from what we saw today, that is exactly what it felt like. And I go back to when this team was in Champions League earlier this season, and they had an opportunity, and they had to beat Barcelona, a beat team from Barcelona that was, and there were chance after chance after chance for Lukaku, and he was unable to do that. That's why they're in the Europa League. Finally, they make a run into this game, and you think, okay, well, he's going to take over. Well, he did early on, and then it was a disappearing act. That is disappointing from Lukaku's perspective.
Frank, are we being too harsh on Lukaku here? After all, he finishes the season with 34 goals across all competitions, tying a record set by Brazilian Ronaldo back in 1998. Surely we can give him some applause for his efforts as well.
We have to give him some credits, but comparing Lukaku with Ronaldo is offending. In fact, the former number nine was maybe the best striker in the world overall. And Lukaku has extreme strengths and can give the performances that when we saw it in the semi-final and we saw after 2 minutes when he takes on Diego Carlos. But I would have been Diego Carlos, I would have lived Lukaku facing the goalkeeper, because he can put the ball not in the top corner but on the corner. Be on the corner flag, because we know that he's not that guy. We're not really precise. So he has the power, but it can be very clumsy. I mean, the own goal that he gives is very unfortunate, as Ali said. But it's typically what Lukaku can do. Any other strikers would have let the ball go. No, he tries to kick the ball out and goes to his own net. I mean, he is a fantastic guy. I mean, a lover of football, gives 100% even more to football. But we have to judge Lukaku according to what he can show us. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's fantastic, but most of the time it's quite average.
Jules, the goals certainly helped make this a great final. So did the chippiness, the combativeness between the two teams. Early in the week, we were kind of talking about whether the Europa League final meant anything to the teams that were still in it. No doubt after this match.
Yes, you're right. For different reasons, though. Sevilla certainly feels that this is their competition anyway. And to win it six times now is pretty incredible. And I think for Antonio Conte, it's the curse of those European competitions, Champions League before with Juventus, that always denied him, really. And now he really thought, okay, if I can get this one, it's the small European Cup, but it's still important. And I think maybe psychologically for him and for the people like us who judge his work, maybe that would have been a big difference. And I think, again, he comes short and again he's disappointed. And for me, again, he's got his part of responsibility on why he failed once more on the European scene to have an impact and to actually win something.
On that note, should he have made his subs earlier? He didn't put Alexis Sanchez in until the 78th minute. I mean, he waited until Inter Milan were down by a goal. You knew at the first half they weren't playing well. Ale, should he have made those changes earlier? Christian Eriksen, another guy that he brought on late?
But it's at the core of what he is as a manager is that he's conservative. And the game was 2-2, and you're not really willing to take a chance just yet. And let me just see how it plays out. Well, the way it was playing out is that Sevilla was really the one team that looked more likely to score, even though that the most clear opportunity fell to Lukaku. Sevilla got their lines forward, and the level of activity of Lucas Ocampo and Luke de Jong, who doesn't have a lot of mobility, but still a handful because he occupies the center backs. And then Banega he's just getting the ball, moving it around. And Reguilón in a couple of 1v1 situations down the left. And Jesús Navas sets himself into the attack down the right. And you could feel the momentum shifting towards Sevilla. And yet there was no reaction from Antonio Conte. To your point, if you're going to have a reaction, it has to come from that talent that you have coming off the bench. And let me just tell you, when you compare the two teams and you compare the two benches and you look to the right and you say, well, this is Alexis Sanchez coming in, Christian Eriksen coming in, and Victor Moses coming in. Those are the options that we have available. Then use them, because that is indeed an advantage to whatever Sevilla has to offer coming off the bench. But again, for Antonio Conte, a conservative coach and a conservative personality, he didn't really want to take a chance. And by the time that he tried to react, it was too late.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Sevilla keeping their perfect record then intact in Europa League finals dating back to 2006. Sevilla a perfect 6-for-6.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What a run it's been for PSG and Bayern Munich, the two sides set to square off Sunday in Lisbon for the Champions League final. PSG looking for their first European crown, Bayern seeking their sixth. For more, we welcome in Craig Burley, Frank Leboeuf, Alan Moreno still with us. Craig, all week we've been talking about goals galore is what we expect in the Champions League final between these two teams. But is there any explanation you can see for how we might get a closed final?
A closed final?
Yeah. Un final cerrado, as they would say in Spanish. A tight affair. You like that, Frank?
I don't want to break...
Final serré in French.
I don't want to break the bad news to you, Sebi, but there's going to have to be a goal in this game because somebody has to win it. It's a final. So at some point, the ball will hit the back of the net. I just don't know when, whether it's going to be penalties or whatever, but I don't think so. I mean, it could well go all the way to extra time and penalties. But I think if it does, it won't be a 0-0 all the way to the end. So I don't think with the calibre of player that's going to be on show and with the dodgy defences at either end, I really can't see it. And listen, neither team set up to try and defend. There's not going to be too much caution about this game, I wouldn't imagine. So I think it's unlikely for anybody going down the bookies to try and put on a 0-0. I would say don't bother.
You talk about all that talent. We've also talked a lot on this show, and I think everywhere, about Bayern Munich's decision to play the high line. Frank, I'll start with you. I asked all the guys on yesterday's show, why not just scrap the high line for this game? You know what PSG is going to do. You know what they're going to be good at. And yet everyone said, no, Bayern Munich has to stick with what they do. What am I missing?
I don't know, maybe the complete understanding of football. I mean, I'm sorry. Yes,
exactly. 100%. Bang. He's got it. He got it right.
I'm sorry, Sebi, to be so harsh on you.
Frank, he just tees himself up so beautifully, doesn't he, Sebi?
That's why I'm wearing the jacket for you, Greg.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I already say as well after the semi-final that the team who would change his tactic will lose the game. It's kind of a chess game, but they don't know to play otherwise. I don't think it's if Paris wait for Bayern Munich to come over and counterattack, they're not going to win the game. And the same thing is going to happen for Bayern Munich. They know how to control the game to go quick vertically and to play their game. I don't think they know how to just wait for Paris Saint-Germain to make a mistake and kill them after that. So it's very simple final, and that's why you had a question for Craig. I think we will see many goals because especially Bayern Munich defense is not as good as we can expect, but we can expect many goals because the two attacks are absolutely fantastic, and they're going to play their own game, and their own game is to attack, to control the game. So I don't know who's going to be the winner, but it's going to be definitely very interesting.
Ale, coming to you for some support in this feels like a bad idea, but stubborn or smart for Hansi Flick to stick with what he's doing when all the analysis I've gotten on this show is PSG is going to go over the top and this high line for Bayern is going to struggle.
Wait a minute, Seb, you're coming to me for support? Is this what you're doing? Is this how desperate you are? No, Seb, I'm not the guy to turn to for support. What I would tell you is that it's too late in this competition and far too advanced in this competition for either one of these teams to say, you know what we're going to try here? We're going to do something different than what we've done over the course of the whole season. So everything that got us to this point, we're going to say, no, we're going to change that. It's not in the personality of either one of these teams to sit back and speculate with the result and speculate with possession and just defend and be solid behind the ball, because both of these teams, they like to have the ball. They like to be the one that is open and the aggressor and the one that is going to take chances going forward. So something's got to give, because both teams cannot have the ball at the same time. But I think what's going to happen in this final is that they're going to take turns. At some point, it's going to be Bayern, the one that is carrying the possession, and some other point is going to be PSG, the one that is going to be on the attack. Whoever is able to take advantage of those moments of dominance is the team that is going to end up winning this match. But you don't change the personality of your team based upon the opposition, because you have to trust that your best level is going to be good enough to get you over the top. That's why you lean on players like Neymar, you lean on players like Mbappe for PSG, and that's why you lean on players like Lewandowski and Müller and Gnabry if you are Bayern Munich. You have to trust your level and you have to try your very best and know that your very best is good enough to win this competition.
All right, enough picking on me for a moment. We do have a combined 11. It is, after all, a Champions League final. Frank Leboeuf got the homework assignment this week to come up with the 11. Let's take a look at it, Frank. Pretty solid, two very good teams. Not too much to pick on, though I will note, no David Alaba in this. You did find a spot for Lucas Hernandez, a Frenchman, in the central defense. Mm-hmm. And you also went Hansi Flick over Thomas Tuchel for your manager. What were the toughest choices for you there?
Well, I picked Hernandez because Alaba is not a real center back. And I think when you see the defense playing, you just have to see that they didn't put at all. I didn't pick Boateng because I think they don't know and they don't look what's going on behind them, and it could be a killer Sunday during the Champions League. I think I like Hernandez. I like the type of defender he is, where he's a real defender, and when he does the function before going over the function, which is attacking, which most defenders do nowadays. And he will secure and cover also Alphonso David that I put on the left side. Why I took Hans-Dieter Flick? Because I think Hans-Dieter Flick completely changed the way that Bayern Munich was playing, the sharpness of the team, the confidence of the team. So it's absolutely fantastic. And Paris Saint-Germain, we still have question marks whether Tuchel is really the coach, if he decides really for in the dressing room who's going to play or not. And I don't think He sorted the problem between Neymar and Mbappe out, meaning their personality, asking them to defend. They will never defend. I don't know if they know, but they never even try to defend, which could be also crucial for next Sunday.
Seb, I have a major question. If indeed Frank is saying that Hansi Flick is his manager of choice, then why is he not trusting the choice of Hansi Flick and playing David Alaba over Lucas Hernandez? Why are you starting or trying to have Lucas Hernandez start over Alaba when the manager that you have chosen
as French.
Your best manager available chooses Alaba over the very player that you're trying to put in?
No, it's not because he's French. It's because he was injured. So it's why he lost his position. Of course, Alaba did the job. I think he recovers very well, but he's always at the limit. And I don't know if against Neymar or Mbappe, he can sort out the problem with this problem that he has to sort out the defensive and what's going on behind him. It's why I pick Hernandez. Oh, I think if Hernandez wouldn't have been injured, he would have been in this position. And maybe for Pavard the same instead of Boateng. I don't know. And it's not again because he's French. It's just because I think they're better. Alaba is a fantastic left back. He's a center back because Davis is now on the left side. It's not about the quality of Alaba that I'm concerned about. It's more about what can you do against Mbappe and Neymar. And I think Lucas Hernandez is a better defender than Alaba. That's it.
Craig, nothing gets you going like a combined 11. What do you think of Frank's choices?
The only one I would change would be Alaba. But, you know, I can see where Frank's coming from, but he's been excellent. You know, there was a shout for Serge. I think there could have been a shout for Serge Gnabry. But then when you look at the other players in the forward position, and he's been absolutely terrific. But then so has Thomas Müller. We know the qualities of Neymar. We know what Mbappe's all about. So probably for that reason, you couldn't shoehorn Serge Gnabry in, because he's certainly done enough in terms of how he's played recently. I mean, in terms of how he's played, he's obviously ahead of Mbappe because he's been injured. But Mbappe, in terms of just pure raw talent, obviously gets in the side. So, not too many issues. Just possibly the centre-half one.
I didn't put Verratti because you know that I'm keen on Verratti, and I really hope that he's going to play the final. But team sheet that I put on, I couldn't put Verratti because he's otherwise not going to be enough real defenders in the midfield zone. It's what I put Koreska instead of Verratti, because I think it's more balanced defensively, because I put four forwards with Thomas Müller, Neymar, Mbappe and Lewandowski.
Frankie, you're taking this way too serious. I mean, honestly, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Nobody cares. I know, the producer won't even ask me to do a combined 11 because I just say get stuff. Nobody cares, mate.
You
don't
say that
worry
to
about
most
it.
Things, to be fair.
Oh, my God, you're so harsh. You know, I worked so hard on that. You don't know if I don't have the money to buy all those players for next season. You don't know that.
You seem as if you've put a lot of time into this. You should just have thrown the names together and emailed it back and said, take that. Don't waste my time.
Okay. Okay.
Craig, Frank did mention Marco Verratti there facing a race to fitness ahead of the final. They managed the quarterfinal, most of the semifinal without him. How big a piece is he for Sunday if he can't go?
Well, actually, the midfield operated quite well in the semifinal, I have to say. Although, it was against Leipzig, who are a good side, but not a huge hitter. Listen, we saw... I think it was Chelsea didn't risk N'Golo Kante towards the end of the season, purely on fitness. And this is a call that a coach has to make, because you can look relatively sharp in training, but it's a Champions League final. And if you're half a yard off the pace, getting to the ball, making decisions, that can cost you. So it is purely down to how match fit he's going to feel. But, you know, the Herrera, Paredes, Marquinhos actually operated not too bad. So it's not like he's got a major concern in there. He has got players that he can put in that can dig and do a job and work hard. So it's going to come down to the call of Thomas Tuchel. The interesting thing is, and you talked about Bayern Munich earlier, just gone back, changing things. All three teams that try to change things in the semi-finals or just before went out. You know, Man City tried to change and went back to a back three, went out. Barca went with two up front and went out. Leipzig changed their shape and went out. So I don't think we're going to see any of these coaches trying to do anything drastic to the lineups.
Frank, has that PSG midfield played well enough, in your opinion, that they don't need to risk Verratti?
Yeah, I am. I agree. And I agree with what Craig said. If Verratti is not fit enough, he's not going to help the team. We saw Depay coming back from injury and not helping whatsoever. And I think Garcia made a stupid mistake. He should have put Dembele at front, especially after that he scored two goals in a quarterfinal. So, yeah, if Verratti is not fit enough, sharp enough, he shouldn't play. That's as simple as that. I think Paredes, Herrera, with Marquinhos are very balanced. They showed their strengths. So, yeah, they should be lined up if Verratti is not strong enough.
For people that follow this sport, go back to the Champions League final of last season for an injured player. And, you know, Harry Kane is a bigger player for Spurs than Marco Verratti is for PSG. As good as Verratti is, there are others in there that can... that can, you know, do a job. He's obviously the main man, Harry Kane, for Spurs. And Pochettino made a big call. And it was clear, crystal clear, from the time that Harry Kane had been out, he was never going to be match fit. And yet, Pochettino tried to shoehorn them into this side. And it was blindingly obvious that Harry Kane was not up to speed. And we've got Marco Verratti here playing in the engine room in the middle of the park. And as Frank said, if he does play and he's not sharp, it will stick out like a sore thumb.
Very well. Let's get some predictions for Sunday's match. Ale, I'll start with you.
Well, I'm going to go with the team that has been the most impressive and the most consistent and really the team that has been dominant, unbeaten in this competition. I'm going to go Bayern Munich and their high line to be able to withhold the runs in behind of Kylian Mbappe and the performances, individual performances of guys like Neymar. I think Bayern Munich is a team that right now is very solid in all facets of the game.
Frank, who are you going with?
Well, I will follow Ali. I said after the first half of the first leg Bayern Munich played against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge that they were the favourites for me. And Craig reminds that a couple of times, reminded that a couple of times in the show. I'm not going to change my thank you very much. I'm not going to change my opinion and my bet on Bayern Munich, even if they play against the French team. I wish Paris is going to win, but you have to ask me the question. I think Bayern is a favorite, so we say a 3-2-4 for Bayern.
Craig, Frank has known forever how good Bayern are. How long have you known how good they are?
Years.
He was just told.
Frank. He did. No, in all fairness, he did. He did say it. He was out there, bang, after that Chelsea game. But look, unlike some, Hansi Flick has a clear knowledge of this game and has done particularly well. I think it's going to be a great final. Actually, it's just a shame because the situation we're in with the pandemic, you know, we normally send some people over there as well. There would normally be 60 to 100,000 at a final because I think it could be one of the best finals for a while. We're finally going to see, there's always some great players, but we're going to see Mbappe and Neymar and Lewandowski and the Müllers and all that, and some of these young guys as well. I mean, it is laden with talent. I think it's going to be a great game. It's going to be obviously broadcast around the world, but no fans there. And I'm going to go for a Bayern Munich win by 4-2 or thereabouts. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, lots of excitement. But I think, to be quite honest with you, Bayern have been a well-oiled machine since Hansi Flick come in. And I'm going to go for them just to edge it.
Wow, Craig Burley, excited about a match. That's first time in a while.
I might not watch it, but, you know, that's my prediction.
Come on, after all that, you got us all that excitement. And now we come crashing back to Craig. All right, listen, tomorrow's show, full build-up to the Champions League final. Bayern Munich, PSG, the boys will have you all set for Sunday.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
23-year-old left-back Ben Chilwell of Leicester City, long linked to Chelsea. Multiple reports out of Europe on Friday that the deal is effectively done. Chilwell will move to Chelsea for a reported fee of between 40 and 50 million pounds. For more, we welcome back Frank Leboeuf and Julian Laurent. Jules, let's start with Chilwell. There was a time where that price was 70 or 80 million pounds. Sounds like good business for Chelsea then.
I think that's the price of the market, Seb. You're right. If you look at Kyle Walker, for example, or Benjamin Mendy, even Aaron Wan-Bissaka to a certain extent, although he was a bit more than 50 million pounds last season to United from Crystal Palace. This is the price for those kind of fullbacks, whether it's right fullback or left fullback. And Leicester were in a strong position because they knew Chelsea were really after a left back. And I think very early on, Frank Lampard targeted Ben Chilwell, who I think ticks all the boxes really that what Lampard wants from a left back. So it was I thought, always a deal that was going to be done as long as Leicester were not too greedy in the asking price.
Jules, Cadena Ser is reporting that Ronald Koeman has made some choices of players he'd like to move on from at Barcelona. These are some pretty big names. Luis Suarez, Sergio Busquets, Jordi Alba. What's the market for these players? Because, yeah, it's okay that he wants to get rid of them, but somebody's got to take them, yeah?
You're right, and I'm not so sure who will take them at their age and the contract they're on. That's the thing. That's the most incredible thing is that Barcelona gave those players 4-5 year contract not so long ago. I think Busquets is contracted until June 2024 or 2023. There's another 3 years for Busquets, who is already in his 30s. And Alba is the same. Suarez is 33 now, and he still has another 3 years on his contract. The way Barcelona handled all those deals, it's just been ridiculous. And good luck to them. I think the best way they will have to do it is to just terminate those contracts, maybe pay some of the wages that those players would have got at Barcelona and then let them go on a free, because I cannot see right now who would pay a transfer fee and then on top of that getting those 30-year-old something on huge money. We're talking here like 200,000 euros a week. This is how big, and that's for Alba and Busquets. Suarez is on 250,000 euros a week, which is crazy again at his age. So I don't think that would be easy to sell.
To be fair, Koeman isn't trying to get rid of everybody just yet. A couple players that he would like to work with. He gave an interview to NOS, a Dutch outlet. Here's what he had to say about Antoine Griezmann. First, with all due respect, Griezmann isn't a winger. He needs to play where he has his entire life, showcasing all of his qualities. For that reason, I believe it's important that a coach knows his players and how to get the maximum out of them. That starts by playing them in their right position. Koeman also spoke about Frankie de Jong. Similar theme in this quote. My idea with Frankie is to play him in the role he had at Ajax and for the national team. I saw him at Barcelona once playing in a different role, and I thought I'd never put him there. When you invest a lot of money in a player, you need to play him in his position where he'll do what you expect of him. Frank, that sounds pretty simple. Just play the guys in their right position. Koeman right here.
Yes, well done. Well done, Mr. Koeman. We didn't know that. That's first a big tackle or two tackles from behind to Quique Setién, I think. If it's not really a problem for Frankie de Jong because he showed his qualities, even if he has been put in another position, I think it's been crucial for Griezmann, and we all know that he's not a winger. We all know that he never played there. And the question after that is, Mr. Koeman, where is he going to play then? Are you going to play striker because you want to get rid of his name? I forgot.
Suarez.
Sorry about that. Suarez. So therefore, why do you say that if we all know that it's not a question? We all know that it's been a problem for Griezmann, and I would say that I said that so many times. But I said that even when just before he signed, where it was a mistake for Barcelona to sign him because he was just double Messi. Because his real position, for me, is just behind the striker. He's not even being a striker. It can be. It happens sometimes. It happens sometimes with Atletico or with France. But his real position is Messi's position. So why do you sign him?
Jules, what do you make of these comments? I mean, Frank's right on it. Yeah, there are reasons that these guys weren't playing in their natural positions.
Yeah, I mean, the young one is a simple one. That's true. They play down of position. His best position is in a double pivot. And I can guarantee you that if Koeman really does what he's just said, Barcelona will play with two in midfield. One will be De Jong and the other one probably will be Pjanic. And that would certainly be De Jong's best position. For Griezmann, like Frank just rightly said, it's a very completely different story because exactly, again, like Frank said, his best position is behind the striker. If you get rid of Suarez, you don't have a striker anymore. So you need to go and get someone else. And then if you really play Griezmann in his best position behind that striker, what happens to Messi? Messi plays wide on the right, but Messi goes everywhere. Messi is a free, he's the best in the world, he's the best that the game has ever seen. So you're not going to restrict Messi and say, listen, Griezmann playing central, so you're going to play right, but stay there. Yeah, stay on the touchline, just stay there. That's never going to happen. So I'm really curious to see how Koeman is going to make them play both in their best position, because to me and to Frank, that's impossible.
Well, if Ronald Koeman thinks he's got dead weight at Barcelona, wait till you see this list from Andrea Pirlo of players that he's looking to move on from at Juventus. It's about three times as long as Koeman's list. Gonzalo Higuain, Douglas Costa, Bernadeschi, Khedira, Alexandro, Daniele Rugani. I mean, this is just looking like a major, major... Forget Barcelona's rebuild. Is Juve going to have a bigger rebuild, Jules?
It's big, and I think what Andrea Pirlo needs to remember is that last summer, Mauricio Sarri and the people at the club, Fabio Paratici, the sporting director, Andrea Agnelli, Pavel Nedved, everybody tried to get rid of Gonzalo Higuain, tried to get rid at the time of Paulo Dybala, of Douglas Costa, of all those players who are surplus, really. They don't need them there. It's far too big squads. They're struggling with the finances right now, so they need to sell anyway, and then they need to sell to buy. But a year ago, no one wanted those players. I'm not sure that this summer, after everything that happened with the pandemic, after the bad season that some of those players had, someone then would be ready to say, hey, Juventus, no problem. I give you 30 million, give me Gonzalo Higuain. I give you 40 million, give me Douglas Costa. I don't think that will happen again. And I think, a bit like Barcelona, Pirlo and Juventus need to get ready for neither of those players leaving this summer because no one will take them.
Jules, Frank, thank you very much. You can hear plenty more from Jules on this week's edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. How do I know that? Because Gab's on vacation, so there's going to be plenty of airtime for everyone else.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Another reminder, the Bundesliga schedule begins September 18th, exclusively here on ESPN+. And it will be the defending champions, Bayern Munich, in the season opener that Friday against Schalke. By the way, Schalke have not won a Bundesliga match since middle of January. So it'll be like 8 months since their last Bundesliga win when they faced Munich. Good luck with that. Nice matchup that Saturday Borussia Dortmund, Borussia Mönchengladbach, a couple teams in the Champions League, and then all you U.S. men's national team fans loving on Tyler Adams right now. First look at him in the next Bundesliga season. That's Sunday, RB Leipzig against Mainz. Antonio Conte, real quick, with some comments that we just got after our taping today and some direct quotes. Here it is. It's only right that we analyze the entire season, look at everything in a very calm way, and try to plan the future of Inter, whether it's with or without me. Again, this said after Inter Milan lost the Europa League final 3-2 to Sevilla. Something happened. There's no point beating around the bush. We have to see whether everyone is prepared to not have another year like this for what happened with me. Pepe Marotta, Piero Auxilio, they were all convinced I should come here, and I will always thank them. It was a very tough year. There are limits to everything, and if situations involve my private life, that is no longer acceptable. Stuart Robson, Shaka Hislop, Julian Laurent will join us on tomorrow's show. Plenty more reaction to those comments from Antonio Conte. For now, though, thanks to everyone involved in today's show. It's time for some extra time. Frank and Ale, enjoy. Welcome, everybody, in today's edition of ESPN FC Extra Time. Frank LaBeouf, Ale Moreno with you. We've got your questions off of Twitter. Chuck asked the first one. Who has the better defense, Paris or Munich? Also, ask Monsieur LeBeouf if he will back off Neymar if he fires PSG to a Champions League title. What do you say, Frank?
Well, first, I just want to tell you that we say Monsieur, not Monsieur. Oh, you know, just to teach you a little bit of French. Monsieur. Just to make sure.
Monsieur.
It's your day. It's your day with me today. Monsieur. Monsieur.
Monsieur.
That's it. Monsieur. Now for your question. Yes, I'm going to back up Neymar, and I'm going to say that he's a fantastic player if he scores two goals and give the silverware to Paris Saint-Germain. Of course, but I already know that he's a fantastic player. Now I want him to be a killer that he hasn't been since the quarterfinal and since the final eight, in fact. So, Paris has a better defense. I think they have the best defense in the Champions League, or in the maybe the best defense in the final eight. But they have a much better defense for me than Bayern Munich. But now it doesn't mean anything. You just have to prove it on Sunday.
Merci, Monsieur.
That's good. Very good.
Yeah. It's acceptable.
Well, you're in your mind.
Almost.
For my next trip to Paris. Frank, Jose Mourinho said that if PSG doesn't win the Champions League, it'll be a failure. Do you agree?
No, it's not a failure because they are facing the best team in the world right now, and Bayern Munich showed to the world that they're really the favorites, and finally Paris Saint-Germain goes to a final and goes further than the quarterfinal, which Manchester City didn't because Mr. Guardiola couldn't go further than the quarterfinal. I think they go better. They're better than last year and the years before. So it's a good step forward. I wish them to win, but if they don't win, no, it's not a failure. That will be a normal result. I think Bayern, again, and we all agreed with that, are the favorites. So it's just fair if they lose.
A little more context there on the Mourinho quotes. He said the last 2 years were failures based on all the investment that PSG has made. They've obviously made the investment this year as well. Ale, would you think it's a failure if they don't get it done this year?
I wouldn't call it a failure, but certainly it would be a wasted opportunity in that you're looking at a team in a unique circumstance like the ones that we have right now in the world, and you've been able to generate momentum in this final eight, and you've played as well as you have, and you've created the opportunities that you have, and Neymar has been outstanding. And so now you're here in the final, and the chance is right here in front of you. So you didn't have to play two-legged affairs. You didn't have to travel here and there and everywhere. You've been focused and concentrated in your job right there in Lisbon, in Portugal. And so, to me, it set up perfectly for PSG to go ahead and win this thing. And so, while it may not be a failure per se, it certainly would be a wasted golden royal opportunity.
Ale, next question for you as well. Will Bayern prefer Pavard as right back, given he's better defensively and knows Mbappe better?
Well, it's something to consider if you're Hansi Flick. And I think if Pavard had some more time to recover from his injury and he had some more game time under him, maybe that's something that you actually try if you're Hansi Flick. The problem is the knock-on effect of this. So if you bring Pavard in, that means that you're going to have to move Kimmich back into the midfield. And so then you're going to have to take somebody out of the midfield. And we have seen outstanding performances from both Goretzka and Thiago Alcantara. And so what do you do there? It's not just the one change that you're making and right back. It's all the changes that then you're going to have to make through the midfield. And so I think if you're Hansi Flick, you just ride the momentum that you have so far. You're coming off two very dominant performances. I think you trust the team that you have on the field and believe that this team is good enough to beat PSG.
Great either or question for our next entry. Who would you rather have in your team, Alphonso Davies or Andy Robertson? Frank?
Wow. It's like choosing between your mother and your father. They're absolutely outstanding. I would say this season, I would say Davies. I mean, he's a new face. We didn't know him. He's a real surprise. Robertson, I've shown the year before with the Champions League campaign that he's a fantastic left back. But we discovered Davies, so you know, it's like. It's like a new news, and you want to step on that. So I would say Davies.
Not a wrong choice here, huh? Ale, who would you take?
I'm taking Alphonso Davies because there is no substitute for speed and pace and athleticism. And while Andy Robertson does a lot of great things and has been outstanding for Liverpool, there is an element that Alphonso Davies brings to the game that cannot be matched, not only what he does offensively and the mismatches that he creates offensively, but how much recovery speed there is defensively as well, which allows Bayern Munich to play a high line because this guy can make up the ground. This guy can cover the spaces that they're leaving behind because of that speed. I think Alphonso Davies has had an outstanding year, even better than I think any of the biggest Bayern Munich supporters would have hoped for. What they have seen out of this player is that he has quickly become perhaps the best left back in the world.
Gentlemen, Thiago Silva today linked with Chelsea, of course, playing out his contract at PSG is the subject of our next question. If Thiago Silva signs for Chelsea, will he be an upgrade over their existing center backs, especially if Chelsea are looking to mount a challenge for the title? Frank?
I think it would be a very good idea to get Thiago Silva. He's still fit and he can serve Chelsea very well because of his experience. And Chelsea desperately need a defense. So I don't know if he's going to be that helpful that he can challenge City and Liverpool. I still doubt about it. But they will have a better defense, and if they can have a better defense, I'm going to be very pleased. I think Liverpool and City are still so much ahead if we compare the qualities of all the players that it's still difficult to say that one player is going to change everything. Now, having Ziyech, Werner, Averst, Thiago Silva, maybe, Reguilón, I think it's his name. Maybe he's going to change the shape of Chelsea, and then maybe they're going to be able to compete against City or Liverpool. But not only one player can change a team.
Speaking of central defense, Ale, is there still any meaning left to keep Gerard Piqué in defense for Barcelona?
Is there any meaning left in keeping Piqué? Yes, I don't think Barcelona is in a position right now to say to Gerard Piqué, yeah, there's a door, go ahead and walk right through that. I think he's still a good player. I think he at times was the best defender that Barcelona had, but really, to be quite honest with you, he may have just been the only defender that Barcelona had. I think right now Barcelona is such in a difficult position because you're trying to do a rebuild, but in order to do a rebuild, you have to bring in new players. Well, how do you bring in new players if you don't have the money to do so? And then the talent coming from the academy is not what it has been in the past. And so you're trying to chase certain things that I don't know you're going to be able to catch up to because you simply financially don't have the funds in order to do that. And in that process of a rebuild, in that process of uncertainty, you don't just let go of an important piece like Gerard Piqué. There are other pieces around that team that you maybe say, yeah, that's enough of that. But Piquet, I don't think is one of those guys. I think you hang on to Piquet, even if he's running his mouth and he's telling you, well, if I'm not the guy, then just let me go. You know what, Piquet? Nobody's going to go put their arms around you and tell you, stay, please, Gerard, stay. Look, this is a business. And if you're Barcelona, you tell Piquet, you're part of this group. We think you're an important part of this group. And you better be here mentally and physically because we're going to need you in order to be successful.
Frank, what do you think? How much longer does Piquet have at the Barcelona, the elite level?
Hopefully for him, maybe 2 other years. But I think he served the club very well.
Of course,
because nobody knows. We are talking about human beings, and we don't know how and when they're gonna step out and not being at the right rhythm that is demanding. So. Now saying that, I think people have been very harsh on Piquet. He's done the job. He's not the best defender in the world. He's not the fastest guy in the world. But you have to find, when you're a coach, the right balance in defense. So meaning that you have to have somebody who maybe is more technical and the other one is more like a dog. And when he was playing with Puyol, they were making the perfect defense. And it's like Varane with Ramos. When Ramos is not there, you know, Varane is struggling. That's the same thing. If I would have played with Laurent Blanc alongside, it would have been a problem. But I played with Marcel Desailly, and Laurent Blanc was playing with Marcel Desailly. There is a reason why, we know, coaches make choices, because some pairs don't work, and some other are perfectly matched. So that's what it is about the central defense in Barcelona. I think they put Umtiti or especially Longley and Piquet, and I think it doesn't work. They have to choose between the two and put a real dog, a real defender like Ramos, who never going to go to Barcelona, but will have a perfect match.
All right, Frank, final question for you as well. Would Gabriel Magalhães be a good fit at Arsenal and possibly strengthen their defense? How impressive has he been in his time with Lee? A little more context there. Apparently, he'd agreed to terms with Arsenal, then was having second thoughts. Manchester United reportedly might be coming in. What do you think, Frank? Good fit for Arsenal?
He's a very good player. He's a very good player, and he has the quality to do something to Arsenal. But I was told that he's delaying his answer because he's waiting for Manchester United to come over. So does he really want to come to Arsenal? I don't know that. Definitely, Arsenal needs to restrain their defense, and he's a kind of player who can improve and do well to the Gunners' defense. So. If they do so, if he signs, I wish him the best, because he's a good defender, somebody that I really like. I'm very concerned about Leeds, by the way, because they are losing so many players and they're going to struggle next season in Liga.
Don't you worry, they signed a young Mexican kid, so he should take care of all of their problems. Pisuto, remember the name. Okay.
Here we go. Somehow, you got that in. Are you kidding me?
All right, let's leave it there for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Plenty more ESPN FC on your screens, building up to the Champions League final on Sunday.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.